Thanks for joining us. I'm really excited because we have Eric Watson on today, as well as Shanshu Vampire, YB. Haven't heard you for a little while, YB. And then some of the newcomers, which is wonderful as well. Some of the people who have been coming every week and sharing their experiences, which is really wonderful. So thank you all for showing up. You are what make this a special event. While we are talking about a book, you don't have to have read the book in order to participate. The book today, as it's been, is Pathways to Pain Relief. And we're kind of spanning two sections, one on childhood experience and one on current stressors. And there is, in fact, even a section entitled, which discusses how the stress that we face are often a mix of current stress and childhood events, where faced with the death of a loved one, or a loss of physical ability, anyone will have stress. But the impact that it has on you and the way that you experience it will be different depending on what your childhood experience is.
I think the locus classicus and point of departure for this whole section in Anderson and Sherman is the quote on location 1637, the one that you utilized before, on the wiki, on the forum, where Sherman is generalizing about all of these people, Rachel, Alex, Isabel, and he's saying, again, the responses to terror are manifold. Some rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, others whistle a happy tune, and then there are those people who fortify themselves with drugs or alcohol while others develop TMS. And all of these people are facing the terror of extinction. Rachel, the death of a child. Alex, the possibility of a tumor in his sinuses. And Isabel, going down to register for Social Security. And that's the common link in all of this. But I think the point I made on the forum was that TMS is like a distant early warning system that kicks in as you get closer to terror, which involves biological extinction. And I see the case of the German soldiers at Stalingrad who were dying in droves. And when they did autopsies, nothing was the matter with them. What had happened was that their metabolism had shut down in the face of terror. And that's the final end of the spectrum with TMS. TMS is the beginning stage. It's a warning about what happens when you're faced with overwhelming terror for too long of a period of time, biological extinction. And all of these people were glimpsing it, one in the death of a child, another simply from registering for Social Security, which brings up a case on the forum, a lady in there who's just turned 65. And my own case, it resonated what was going on.
Going back to the three cases, so there was Rachel, whose daughter, this is a kind of a heartrending story. Mm-hmm. Her daughter had leukemia, and she saw her die before her eyes, and there was so much uncertainty. She had to watch her daughter being read the last rites three times, and the grief here just overwhelmed her ability to cope, but she kept plodding forward. Just not processing at all. But when the funeral came, that was when her TMS flared up and prevented her from going to the funeral. So that's the first example. That's Rachel. Then there was Alex, who had a cancer scare. He had a problem, I think, in his jaw, maybe.
Sinuses.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and he elected to sit and wait for the test results, rather than going home and facing the uncertainty. And so he began to develop TMS symptoms right there in the waiting room. And then he felt if he called his wife, he would demonstrate weakness, and that only intensified the response.
Right. Wow. But and then his TMS came in. Was someone about to say something?
Oh, mm-hmm. I just said, wow. This is Derek. I'm listening.
Good to hear. Anyway, so, but then his TMS came in, and that gave him a reason, an acceptable reason, where he could call his wife and get the consolation that he needed for the intense physical pain that he was feeling. So in some sense, that was acting, as we said, as a defense mechanism, where he was able to get what he needed. And then there was Isabel, who was just turned 65, and she was perfectly healthy before turning 65. And then she had to register, I think, for Social Security, and that brought on, it was tough because she felt invisible. She felt, I think, for her, attaining that age felt like she was being put out to pasture, that she didn't matter anymore. And that's how she experienced that. You know, getting older is tough on anyone, but different people experience it differently based on their past experience. Like, Eric, you were mentioning earlier Walt. And he's handling it very well, right? The stress of growing older.
Correct. And, you know, Walt, as he was in pain, he really didn't realize that it was something from like 50 years prior or 40 years prior and with his mom. So when he realized that and when he put that down in the journal and it just actually as he was writing about it and as he put it in the journal, he didn't even realize he was holding that as a repression. And then when he put it down on the journal, it came to light. You know, it came to his consciousness, and it relieved a lot of pain from him. At first, you know, he hurt and cried, but it relieved a lot of pain.
I've had something similar. I'm going to be 65 next month, and I'm actually looking forward to it because Medicare is kicking in, and I've got a crap wall with me, and I can't afford to seek medical help without that. So I'm a high energy person generally speaking, but lately I've been down. But for me, it was when my father died. My father died about in 2005, and he committed suicide. And when I finally found him, he was in a decomposed position state, and I moved. I'm living in Florida, and I moved here from California to take care of him. And he never called to say that he was whatever, but he did tell me he was going to commit suicide. And I never processed it because I have nobody to talk to. I have no family. That was my last family. I have no family at all. And so I feel very alone. And that's me on the...
I think that's what Dr. Zaffirides talks about. Those are the points where you undergo existential crises. And Anderson and Sherman here talks about rites of passage as being those moments when latent psychic content rises up. And you have to confront the past.
And I guess I have
Hi, can I say something? This is Barbara. I have the same kind of situation that you do with the, I'm in Florida too, funny, and I feel like I have no family too. But I had a question to ask, and I wonder if you guys can answer it. I saw on the board where it was written that when you go back to events that happened in the past, that it re-traumatizes you. And Bruce, you were just saying about how this person felt better when he realized the trauma that he had in the past and he was journaling. How do you know? Because, see, I get really sick whenever I do ISTDP or I go and remember something from the past, my symptoms exacerbate. So I'm wondering which thing is...
So do mine. Mine do too. And I'm seeing a therapist, and the therapist said that every time you try to do that, you're going to get worse for a while until you get through. You have to go deeper, and I haven't gotten to the point where I could go deeper yet, but he said I was going to get worse before I get better.
I think that's what Rick R. complains about, the fact that you're reinforcing the neural pathways when you go back and dredge this material up and relive it. And if you do that habitually, you're not processing that material. Instead, you're reinforcing those feelings. And that only intensifies the PMS symptoms. What you have to do, I think, is to reprocess it. I don't know what words Dr. Alexander would...
Memory reconsolidation.
Yeah, exactly. That's the word he uses.
Can you explain that for us?
So memory reconsolidation happens. This is my perception, and I haven't finished the book. I have listened to... there's a thread on the forum where they talk about the shrink wrap podcast where the person who is promoting this idea was interviewed, Bruce Ecker. Anyway, I have listened to that. The impression that I get is that the most important step is when you re-experience the old emotion and you're re-experiencing the emotions that brings up, you want to re-experience in comparison a positive emotion. So you can teach yourself that the thing which brought you pain, that your trigger, isn't actually so scary, because you can take a more positive, make a more positive association with it. I think that a good tool for this is Peter Levine's work. So Peter Levine is the guy who invented something called somatic experiencing. And he started by looking at animals and their stress response and how they experience trauma. And he really focuses on trauma. And it sounds like what you're describing are very, very traumatic experiences. And the problem here is that when you bring up these traumatic experiences in hopes of discharging them, you get re-traumatized. And that's a problem. So if I remember from somatic experiencing, you can read his book. His most famous one is Waking the Tiger. And Matthew N.J. swears by it. You can ask him. He's actually the guy who organizes the chat room. And Bob Evans also swears by it. Fran Anderson, the woman, the co-author of Pathways to Pain Relief, and another one of the Sarno psychologists, also recently gotten a multi-year degree from Peter Levine's Somatic Experiencing Institute. But one of the tools that Peter Levine uses, which I think might be helpful,
called Winking the Tiger?
Waking, as in waking it up.
Oh, Waking the Tiger. Okay.
Yes. There's two tools. The first is you pay attention to your body and you develop an awareness of the emotional states that you're in. Shinshu Vampire may be able to comment on this, but emotions are very much physical phenomena. And if you pay attention to how you feel, what you're feeling as you're doing the emotion, that can help. Alan Gordon, I think, talked about that in one of the earlier webinars. He had people focus on, okay, as you talk about that, as you journal about that, as you remember that, how do you feel that in your body to develop that somatic awareness? So that's maybe one tool. I wouldn't by any means consider myself an expert on this. Another tool would be what I think is called pendulation, where you develop a reassuring and soothing thought, and then like a pendulum, you can swing back and forth between the traumatic thought, the re-traumatizing and scary thought, and the more positive one. And that, I think, reminds me of the memory reconsolidation thing, because once you've figured out what your reassuring thought is, when you go to the trauma, you can say, okay, I need to feel in control again. I'm going to go to the reassuring thought so that I know that I can, so that I feel in control, and so that I just feel more confident and am able to confront this loss of my parent, and grieve it without becoming overwhelmed by it, where I can be mindful of it without being consumed by it. So Those are some techniques. But whenever you're in a situation and you feel like your journaling is bringing stuff up, I'm really glad to hear that you're working with a therapist, because I think that a therapist is exactly what you need to be able to you could use the word of titrating, to slowly add the emotions in. So anyway, that was my very esoteric kind of or take on it, or academic take on it. Does anyone else want to share their experience of dealing with overwhelming emotions?
Well, to summarize what Peter Levine talks about in a more mundane fashion, in a biological fashion, what he noticed was that animals, like animals that are preyed on in the African belt, when they're chased by a lion, will go into a freeze response. They'll go into a freeze response where they'll lay there and play dead. And this gives them an opportunity if the predator loses attention or interest in the prey to get up and run away. And they're able to shake off this trauma because they're more in touch with their primal biology. They don't have that prefrontal cortex that we have, that once it's turned on, keeps us in that traumatized state. Now, how you reconcile the prefrontal cortex with the limbic system, I guess that's all part of the practical therapy that Levine has developed. But what he wants you to do, what he wants his patients to do, is to be able to shake that off. He has them shake off that trauma almost physically, viscerally. And that goes along with what Howard Schudner is talking about in terms of the concept of mindfulness. And it parallels, ISTDP, where you move from the experience of the emotion through shame and guilt to compassion for yourself. And that's part of that same process, or it parallels it. It does the same kind of thing of allowing you to integrate or process that emotion onto another level. It's interesting how all of these therapeutic techniques parallel each other and perform some of the same functions, although in different roundabout ways. That's just my two bits. Anyway, I just wanted to get back to Levine, because he talks about shaking off therapy as a shaking off trauma as a very physical process, which of course would begin with the kind of mindfulness that Howard Schudner advocates, where you are able to locate consciousness in the different areas of your body and see how your body is feeling. Does anyone else have anything to add to that?
I think you need to learn to build a state of courage before you go into it's. See, when my mom passed like 10 years ago, I was there and I saw it, and it traumatized me, and I couldn't ever get that picture out of my head. And I didn't want to face that picture of what I saw. And this is Eric Watson, anyway.
Yeah,
anyway,
I know.
Okay. But I didn't want to ever see that picture. And what I had to do was I had to build a state of courage. And when I say state, it's changing from that scared, hurt state. Thinking of a time that, you know, going completely away from your mindset and going into a time that everything was so beautiful and great, and go into that state. And when you get into that state, then try to face it and look at it, and it can help.
My problem is with my father that I don't remember a time that everything was so beautiful and great, because he was also very abusive. I used to get beaten up all the time and I was verbally being put down. So there's a big love-hate relationship, and I have a lot of anger and rage on top of the trauma. It's bad. It's bad.
Very powerful. Now, can you look elsewhere in your life and find a positive experience? Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, everything you said, I've been listening to. I've been taking notes. So.
So that other positive feeling elsewhere in your life is a resource which you can use and you can draw on when the journaling gets too intense and overwhelming. You can just bring yourself back to that. I think that there's some writer, I forget who says, if you've got pain in so many parts of your body, can you find just one part in your body somewhere that isn't in pain, and then just go back to how that feels. Take your attention there to remember, a place in your body which isn't in pain. And I think you can do the same thing with your experience when you're journaling, to do that pendulation.
That's a good idea.
Good.
Yeah, that helps. I'm writing this down. Okay.
I believe that was Steve Ogdenich that said that.
A wise man.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Eric, about those last things. I remember seeing my dead father's face, or my dying father's face, imprinted in my mind for weeks afterwards, every time I would close my eyes, the last time I'd seen him. And it's very interesting, the face came back to me on his death anniversary when I was looking at a dog's face. And then I realized he had beaten a dog in front of me when I was six. I think that was actually tied a lot of ends together.
Yes.
The early childhood trauma, the death of my father, that was a very integrating experience because I had a lot of dreams at that time. But I know what you mean about those last impressions of a superego's face. It brings back everything, doesn't it? The whole life that you've shared with them is summarized in that last image.
Yes, you look at it, you see that last image, and all of a sudden just that whole experience overwhelms you again. And the whole time you're trying to not think, the more you try not to think about it, you can put it on the back burner, sort of say. Every now and then, it'll always come back to you, and it'll just haunt you. And I don't know how the other guys. I think everybody leads to the same. When it comes to reconciliation, I believe we're all going to the same way, to the same outcome. And what I did? Did y'all want to know what I did for the reconciliation?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Okay. I went ahead and made sure that I built myself up into that. Or I thought about a good state, a time in my life that had nothing to do with that thought, with that last picture that kept coming to my mind. And when I got to that courageable state, what I did was I closed my eyes, I went into a meditative state, okay? And then I went back before the death actually happened. And I remembered my mother in a beautiful picture. And I remembered how, beautiful it really was to be with her.
Mm.
And then I associated with that. And then when I, came back up through time, and I didn't, and that picture that was haunting me for so many years, when I came back up through time, it just killed the charge to it. Does that make sense? If there's any questions, I'll answer them. It's called timeline therapy, is what I just talked about.
I'm going to try that. It sounds like that would help.
Luckily, my father and I.
I'm getting sicker as I listen, but I'm going to go through this. This is really—it's a very painful discussion for me right now. But I gotta internalize everything that I've been hearing. So thank you.
Well, if you do need to take a break, you can always do that. I know when Dr. Anderson leads talks about in her talk in Los Angeles at the conference there, if I remember correctly, she was very careful to guide people to be aware of what they're feeling and to take care of themselves. So even now, in Alan Gordon's webinars, he always says, pay attention to where you are right now and value that and say, okay, if you need to right now, hang up the phone and say, okay, this is all I need, then do that to take care of yourself and kind of give yourself the reparenting that you deserve. So I encourage you to do that if that's what you feel and only know that what's right for you.
I'm almost there, but I'm gonna stick it out a little bit more. I may do that.
Glad to hear it.
Luckily for me, my father and I reconciled on his deathbed, and he told me he had been quite abusive, like your father, and he told me that it didn't need to have been that way. And when we were sitting next to each other, him in the bed and me next to him, it was just like when we had been fishing when I was 15, out on Saddlebag Lake. It was like it used to be when I was young and he was young. It was quite an emotional experience, you might imagine, because time stood still. Luckily, I had that with him. We got a chance to iron things out. But if you don't, then it leaves a lot of residue later on, no doubt. This did. It was hard to reconcile the end with some of the stuff that had gone on in between. But still, that's a really important thing to do with your relatives, I think.
Yes. There's a lot of different ways. There's so many different ways to be able to handle reconciliation. So many different ways. And the main thing we have to do is like Forrest said a little bit ago, and like Bruce was mentioning there, is we have to remember, try to somehow get some kind of good memory there. I think somebody else mentioned that there was never a good memory. And with those memories, with the people that I help, there's another form that you can just take the charge out of it completely without having to go through. I think that's for another talk. there's so many different forms and they work, and I've helped so many people come through this, and I just feel like it's a blessing to be able to help people come through this, because you can hear the hurt in their voice. And it just, and anybody on here that's there, we're here for you.
The only thing I've done is I sat, this was right after, well, it was actually before he died, because we actually could never talk to each other. We never had a civil conversation. But so I sat down and wrote a letter, and I wrote all my feelings about good and bad, and I never got a chance. I wanted to give it to him before he died, but I didn't have a chance. So I put it on his grave. But the feelings still keep, and that helped. That tempered things. But it doesn't last. It keeps coming back. I can't get rid of it forever. It just keeps coming back. And that's where I'm at. And I am going to leave. I've got to process everything I've heard. You've all been so much help, and I can't. I've got a splitting migraine. I've got a, and I'm ready to cry. So I'm going to go.
Is this Barbara? Is this Barbara the one speaking?
I'll come back next week.
Okay. We look forward to chatting with you.
Something.
Take care.
Thanks.
Eric, it wasn't me. This is Barbara. I'm still
Okay. I hear you, huh?
I have a very distinctive voice, I think. But
yes, you do. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I try to come every week.
Okay. Great. Great.
So, yeah, power of journaling. It certainly brings up an awful lot of stuff, and I'm really glad that she's working with a practitioner. She mentioned earlier that she found someone. I had given her a list of practitioners who work via Skype, and so I think that's super important when you're dealing with these powerful, overwhelming emotions. It's super important to have someone who can provide more one-on-one service and who's trained and can help ensure your safety. So yeah. I think that's a good thing and an important thing. Well, let's keep going.
Yeah.
So we talked about, or does anyone else want to jump in? Process what we've talked about so far. Was it scary for anyone to...
This is Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
And you guys, I know you guys touched on fear. I think fear is my biggest problem. And I wonder if anybody can give an experience about or has anything to say about how to come out of agreement with that fear, because my fear, I think, keeps the my pain, weakness cycle perpetuating, and it's just, I don't know what to do about it.
I think fear is too weak a word. I think the word that Dr. Sherman uses, terror,
They're
all, fear is on the road toward terror, on the road toward an overwhelming emotion that's too much to handle, like the soldiers of Stalingrad who started dying without reason, where the metabolism just shuts down. We get TMS pain, but they just expired.
Eric, do you have any thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Forrest. I'm sorry.
Eric,
this is Barbara. Me and her's been Barbara, right?
Yeah.
You my buddy? Okay. Me and her's been working together over the phone, and I told her that the next time we spoke that I would like to do a timeline therapy with her. It actually takes a good hour to get through it, and that's the only way I would know to get her through this fear. She didn't know what it consisted of, and I told her, and she didn't know if she could face that, but it's actually not it's actually breaking the fear, the charge of the fear away. It's reconciliation. That's what it is. It's, you just take the negative charge out of the fear. But it's something that would take me over an hour to do with a person.
Okay, so something for us potentially to Google, those who are interested in that. I feel like a lot of us on the forum do struggle with anxiety or fear or terror, and it is a challenge. I know for me it's interesting to watch how this progresses over time. I see people solving it. I don't know what the magic bullet is that allows people to do that. Barbara, if I remember, a lot of your anxiety comes from health concerns, right? It comes from your TMS. And
well, the concerns are that I have to have somebody take care of me, and I have to have AIDS 24 hours a day, and, you know, I don't have a family member to do it, and so I'm alone in the house with the AIDS, and that causes me great terror.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm not getting well, because I don't know how to reconcile the terror. You know, I guess terror is the right word. But But, you know, with those of us who have TMS, we don't exactly feel our feelings properly. That's the issue. We put our feelings into the pain in our body.
Right.
So I
think
that my situation is so severe because of this degree of terror I have.
Well, and I think Sherman talks about that very eloquently in the book, Pathways to Pain Relief. He talks about it as a body language. He talks about us expressing our fears in a physical way, much like before we have linguistic abilities, before we can speak it in language. When we're children, toddlers, we'll throw a tantrum. And in some sense, TMS is like the body throwing a tantrum because it doesn't know how or is too afraid to express the powerful emotions which might come up. We saw that, I think, earlier in the call. And in particular, with the two stories that we covered for this week, we had Rachel, whose daughter had leukemia. She couldn't deal with the powerful emotions that brought up because that is so scary. And I think that enjoy in the chat room. By the way, if people hear those sounds, those are people in the chat room. We're having a nice discussion in the chat room.
I thought that was a UFO running through the phone.
No UFOs. this is just my opportunity to remind people to turn your speakers off. We have enough people on the call today it'll be tough to get everyone, but I encourage you to turn your speakers off on your computer so that we don't all hear that, and also to go to tmswiki.org/chat so that if you aren't, perhaps, since only one person can talk at once, if you have something else that you want to add, you can do that there. Anyway, earlier Nina highlighted this point, which I thought was very interesting. She talked about how for Rachel, the one whose daughter had leukemia and died, and then she got ferocious TMS on the day of the funeral. It was there to protect her. It was there to say, "Hey, I'm not quite ready. I need a little bit more time to process this. I can't go to my daughter's funeral right now." It was also protective for him. He wasn't ready to face the fear. He needed some soothing, and the TMS got him that. Sorry?
I think that Dr. Sherman says at the end of the Rachel episode where she was confronted with her daughter's death and developed TMS, Dr. Sherman comments about TMS and her TMS and says, like a brownout, Rachel's physical pain was a temporary emergency measure taken to ward off an even greater catastrophe without having to shut down her power grid completely. I think a temporary emergency measure is one way to classify TMS, which goes along with my whole spiel about moving toward biological extinction as the final end of all of this. You know, you're just getting a hint of it with TMS. But
And Dr. Sherman uses such powerful language. It does have this, oh my God, these emotions are so powerful, they will destroy me, because that's how it felt back when we were children, this aspect, like the example you gave in Stalingrad. Was it Stalingrad?
Stalingrad, yeah. Read Tony Beaver's book on Stalingrad.
Way too much to read already.
If you don't want to sleep at night.
Yeah. So in some sense, these things are very protective for us. And we can see that, I guess, in what Lynn was talking about earlier, how these emotions can overwhelm us, how we need to titrate it and take it slowly. We need a safe place that we can go to when the feelings start to get overwhelmed. We may need professional help, and many of the people talking, many of the people who've called in and asked questions today, I think all of them actually are working with therapists, which I 100% support, talented, licensed individuals with good training who can help guide you when things do get overwhelming. But it does remind me again of what Dr. Anderson said in that talk, where you need to pay attention to your body, listen to its signals, the TMS may be a signal that it's time to slow down a little bit and take care of yourself and give yourself that care that you need.
You know, I want to say something. I was going through so much in my mind in the 10 years leading up to the pain just making me bedridden. At 39 years old, I couldn't even get out of bed. And in my mind, I was going so fast, just so much different thoughts, just running through there so much. And I really believe when the TMS really kicked back in, it was to save me from just, you know, having an implosion in there, just too much. And I had to understand to slow it down and start taking better care of my own thinking. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I had to slow it down. I was too, it wasn't that I was scared of pain, because I'd been through it for nearly 25 years, but it was all the other stuff I was going through. I was just putting so much on myself. And then when the pain did hit, it was just, I mean, the bedridden pain where I actually was bedridden, when it did hit, all it was just a little bend. And when I did that little bend, I thought it would go away. And then I would be able to, you know, accustomed to my normal 5-6 level pain, and next thing I know, a week later, I was in the bed and couldn't get out, and that's where I was for almost a year. And then I got the understanding, you know, that my thinking, because I was in total fear then. Then I went into total fear. But my mind, I believe the TMS mechanism really knew that I needed to slow down. I needed to grab a hold and get things back in order and understand what everything was happening. And it really saved my life.
It all starts with the mind, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like getting that soothed.
If only I had known that my TMS was emotional after my mother's death, I would have been able to resolve it then, because I bought the physical diagnosis and figured I had to go to therapy and do something physical to fix it. And it becomes so obvious when you realize what the emotions are doing as a strategy to make you take a break.
Yes.
To make you slow down, because you can't confront these emotions that are so powerful.
That's it. Correct. That's great, Bruce.
Mm.
If only I had known.
Well, okay. Well, luckily, our listeners do know now. Do you think maybe this would be a... We've only got 4 more minutes. I see people starting to go into the drop-in chat room. Shall we take that as a nice thought to end on? Would anyone else like to share any closing thoughts?
This, I just want to say that this can be overcome. These thoughts can be discharged. It can be. The biggest thing that most people that I work with is they're scared, and they just don't believe that it can be discharged. They don't believe that it can be reconciliated, but it does, and it's true, and there is help, and it works. Okay.
Absolutely. And excellent. You're talking to a bunch of people who've done it. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.